Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Ian Stone, and over the next hour, we're going to be digging down into the details of the football doings and asking the pertinent questions. Like, is Ronaldo the problem or the solution at Manchester United? What's happened to Harry Maguire? And have Tottenham broken Antonio Conte already? We'll also be asking whether Arsenal have an indiscipline problem. Yes, is the answer to that one. And we'll be celebrating Chelsea's victory over Palmeiras in the Club World Championship. And when I say celebrating, I mean mocking relentlessly. Whatever your views, whoever you support, don't go anywhere, because the football's on. Yes, this is the football show that looks punditry in the eye and says, do you want some? Our guests this week are two of the finest comedians currently prepared to get up this early in the morning. It's Charlie Baker and Elliot Steele. Hello, chaps. Charlie, what have you noticed this week?
Antonio Conte's hat, Ian. I think it's an example of how badly it's going for Antonio Conte. I know we'll talk about the football side in a minute. Antonio Conte, we know, has had his hair weaved in, and it's a beautiful job. They've done a beautiful job. He's a great-looking man. He looks like classic Italian, like he's chiseled out of stone, just a beautiful sculpture of a man. Over the last few weeks, I've been looking at his coat. He's had this beautiful Hugo Boss coat that he's been wearing on the sidelines, making everyone else look utterly awful. And then Sunday, he had a cap on. I don't know if you saw it. He had a Spurs cap on, which made me think, maybe worry for that hair. So I think, oh, maybe the hair's, maybe it's started to fall out. Maybe he's going to have to go back to Turkey or something and get it done. Be one of those people on the plane from Turkey with a bucket hat on when it's all been woven in. So I was worried about the hair. And then I thought, oh, no, I know what's happening here. He's wearing the club shop. They've turned him into Tony Pulis.
The Antonio Pulisio.
Antonio Pulisio. They've turned him into it. It's only taken a month. It's unbelievable.
Oh, that's one of the greatest crimes ever in football, if that's happened.
We'll get the Spurs in a moment. Elliot, what about you?
What I've noticed is that Crystal Palace, my beloved team, are pretty much in the same position we were as last year, but we're just happier. Like, we just feel like a new... It's like we've got an old... The same... Like, it's like we've gone and got a new partner, like a new girlfriend, and there's the same issues, but she's just a bit fitter. So we're just a bit more happy with it. That's all it is.
Well, enjoy Vieira while you can, Elliot.
Oh, please don't take him.
Oh. Anyway, Ian.
That is Arsenal looking over at us like is like the person with more money and a nicer car and abs. Guy, and I do like your girlfriend.
All right, let's talk about Spurs then. Spurs lost at home to Wolves this weekend after conceding a couple of goals so hilarious any of us could open a rowdy late show at a rough comedy club just before Christmas with them. It was the first time Antonio Conte has lost three games in a row since 1852 or something. I think when he was on his original hair, in fact. Elliot. Is it fair to say that the new manager bounce at Spurs is over?
Yeah, I think it was over in about 4 days when Conte came out and went, this team is not good enough. And then also went, I would have also loved the Manchester United job, is basically what he said. I think when a manager in the first week of football has said that, you can kind of go, oh, the bounce is over.
Yeah.
He's not quite going to have the effect we thought he was going to have.
Do you think having one of the best stadiums in the world makes it worse when you're such an average team?
I hope the NFL they play there is good. Like it must be frustrating to be a Spurs fan because, and I know you know Ian will give them a lot of sympathy, but they're almost like two or three players away from being brilliant, but then whenever they sort something out, another fire starts with like Harry Kane stops scoring or something just happens with them where they sort something. We've got a new manager. Great. Oh, our striker can't be bothered anymore.
Yeah.
And they can't really go. You can't really drop Harry Kane, can you?
Well, I want to ask Charlie, do you think Harry Kane is just a seething ball of resentment at the moment?
Oh, he's furious, isn't it? I mean, it's so Spursy that they played Wolves and lost to Wolves and yet they couldn't sign Adama Traore. You know, they just it was trying to sign the most Spurs player of all time, all like skills but no end product, which is like the stadium itself, isn't it? They've got this incredible stadium, yet they can't win a match in it. It's absolutely brilliant. Harry Kane, it's like he's been on. It's like, you know, when you see those celebs who've been on Strictly and they've spent all this time with these glamorous dancers and then they have to go home to their boring humdrum wife. And that's what has happened to Harry Kane in the summer. He's been like dancing with Man City and like, you're going to play up front with Ronaldo. And, you know, in front of De Bruyne, you know, all these amazing players. It's going to be amazing. We've got Man City have 25 football kits and about four fans, football kits and fans. And yet, here you are, still in North London. And it's like, ah, you can just see he's just trying not to be cross. I'm fine. I'm up. You know when you say to someone, why are you in a mood? And it's the worst thing to say. I'm not in a mood. That's what Harry Kane is. He's in a mood and everyone's going, why are you in a mood? And he's going, I'm not in a mood. And
yeah, he's putting him in a mood, isn't it?
People are asking him in a mood.
He's in a mood.
I mean, what he's got, how many goals has he scored? He scored 10 plus.
He's got about 10. Most of them are in the Only Fools and Horses Europa League. So, you know, it doesn't really count, I don't think. I mean, Elliot, how is it for Spurs fans to watch Kieran Trippier turn up at Newcastle and win two games with two goals?
But then they did have to watch him also get injured and go,
There is
Kieran Trippier. But it must be infuriating, the players that they... It's kind of like Spurs are always this club that... they're great at producing an amazing player who goes on and does amazing things. Now, Kieran Trippier is going on to save Newcastle, so let's not get carried away.
Kyle Walker at Man City.
But we would go back to like Modric, Van der Vaart, Bale. There's always a player there that you go like, wow, I can't wait to see them at Real Madrid. Like, they're going to be so good.
They look great in white. They look so good in white.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject, much as I'd like to talk about Tottenham for the entire show, I think we should talk about other teams as well. While we're on the subject of broken, I should say that we are recording this before Manchester United have played Brighton. And it's very possible that by the time you watch this, they've won 6-0 and Ronaldo has scored 4 just to spite us. Be that as it may, Manchester United are struggling to get a top four spot, and every day Cristiano looks more and more like a boy who wanted a bike for Christmas and was given a Satsuma instead. So we still feel it's valid to ask the question, how do you solve a problem like Ronaldo? Charlie, is the problem not just that he's 37?
That is a problem. Although, you know, players at their level can play. We have a player at Torquay United called Danny Wright. He's 37 years old. At his level, he is the best player you could possibly have in the division. Yeah. He plays about 3 games in 10 because he gets injured. But at his level, he's fantastic. So Ronaldo, on his day in the Premier League, is untouchable.
Yep. Yeah.
But he is... he has a massive ego.
Ronaldo?
He has a massive ego.
What?
I think he thought, I'll get rid of Solskjaer and now I will be the manager. I will be the manager and I will be the captain and I will also design the new stadium and I will also sign all the players because Sir Alex Ferguson has asked me personally to come and play for Manchester United again when he 100% should have gone to Man City.
Yeah.
100% should have done that. It was a massive mistake for his ego, for his career, for all those things. He 100% should have gone to Man City. He's a Manchester United legend, but this is the whole problem with Manchester United, is they just look back all the time, and they used to be such a forward-thinking football club.
Yeah.
Like they broke down barriers, they created football that we know now, they created that. And yet they're looking back going, oh, we were brilliant then, so surely we can look... And you can't be a tribute act. I've called them that before, a 90s tribute act. You cannot be that. And I know Ronaldo's best years were sort of 2003-04, but it's just, never go back. And that's what they constantly try and do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing is, Elliot, Charlie does make a point about them looking back. Obviously, it doesn't help having the Sir Alex Ferguson stand looming over the players every time they look up. But, I mean, I agree. Ronaldo, on his day, is amazing. It's just that that day rarely coincides with the day when they're playing.
I disagree. I think the problems... I think the problems at United are more deep-rooted than the manager. The problem that... How can they... Harry Maguire has been awful this season, but how can he play...
Hang on. We'll get to him. We'll get to him.
How they've got players like... They bring players in like Pogba, who are incredible, and then somehow make them average.
Yeah.
So it's more deep-rooted at United than it is like a manager or anything. There's an attitude problem there, and you've got to ask... Why are the players having this attitude problem? Where's it coming from? Because I don't think it's just coming from a manager. There's something about the way the club's being run that we're not privy to seeing that they're clearly going... it's like, you know when you turn up to a gig and the promoters like not put the chairs out yet and they've not sorted... And they go, oh, we're just going to put the mic stand here. And you go, no, put it on the stage... That's what I think Manchester United is as a football club, is you agree to go there, you get there, and you remember it being this great thing, and then you look around and you go, oh my God, nobody knows what they're meant to be doing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But I'm on 250k a week, so I'm not going to leave.
My son likes Lego. He used to love Lego as a kid, and we had Harry Potter sets, and we had technical Lego, and we had just like general boxes of Lego. And now, he used to love all that, and now all that Lego is just in one big box in the loft, all jumbled up. You don't know which is which. And that's Man United. They've got technical players. They've got just old bits of Lego. They've got kids' Lego. They've got you know, bits of old Duplo hanging about and some old stuff that probably was mine from a kid. And it's all in one box, and no one knows what to do with any of it. So you make just weird contraptions now, and that's Man United. It's just, no one knows. And I don't know how they fix it either. Other than going to the tip, chucking all the Lego out and buying loads of new Lego. And that's the end of the Lego analogy.
I think we worked that Lego pretty much to death, but fair enough.
Is anyone getting anything to add on the Lego? No, good, move on.
Could you do it again, but with Bionicles, with just Lego. To make a bit more sense to my...
Hashtag ad. It's really expensive Lego.
It's not the only problem, as Elliot said. I mean, Marcus Rashford... He hasn't been the same player since he started feeding kids and promoting literacy. I mean, Elliot, is the choice well-fed, literate children or trophies?
I think it is. And as someone who isn't a Manchester United fan, I think he should continue feeding the kids and promoting literacy. But if I was a Manchester United fan, I would take children living in poverty for a trophy.
Yeah.
But that is a tale as old as time with football, isn't it?
I agree. One of the other issues in this United team is the precipitous decline of Harry Maguire. Outstanding for England, he looks like a newborn foal playing for United. And with that head, one has to feel for the mother. Was he worth 80 million quid? I mean, he's got Varane next to him. I mean, that should help, shouldn't it?
Is anyone worth 80 million quid? That seems to be the going rate for a half-decent player now. Yeah. Or for a player that's, you know, he's won the Premier League. He's England international. He's fantastic. He scores goals. What does he get? 5 goals a season, probably, doesn't he? Goal-scoring defender who's won the Premier League, that's probably 80 million quid these days. Every player has a shelf life. And I think his peak was probably at Leicester, and they bought at the top. And like any stocks and shares, you buy at the top and then it dips. Yeah. And also, if you're in a team that just doesn't know what it is, then you're, as a defender, you're going to be under pressure all the time. And you're going to have to do a lot more work.
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, when he was at Leicester, he would have had N'Golo Kante in front of him, wouldn't he?
Amazing.
That would probably help. No, it was Robert Huth and Wes Morgan who won the title with N'Golo Kante in front of them. That would definitely help. But I do worry, Elliot, about the demise of the English centre-half. In 2006 at the World Cup, the four centre-halves were Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Sol Campbell and Jamie Carragher. I mean, wow. I'm not sure Maguire's getting into an England team ahead of any of them.
No, but that was, you know, 2006 was also that golden generation where we were awful. Like that is that, and it's kind of, that's kind of almost what Manchester United are. They buy these amazing players. They buy someone like a Harry Maguire, who on paper is this great player, and they just go into the team and do this. And it football doesn't work like that. You know, they've had the same thing with buying Sancho, and I know he scored on the weekend, and I think Sancho's a great player. But they just almost, Manchester United buy players the same way I buy players on FIFA. Like you just go, oh, that works. And you just put it in. But there's so much more to football than there is, you know, than to just buy this player and work here. And I think Maguire, his confidence has gone. I've never seen someone. That backwards tackle he tried, that no-look defending tackle.
It was odd, that.
It was like he was trying to use the, thought he was in the Matrix and was able to just, the first bit of defending is just, don't watch the man, watch the ball. And he did neither. Yeah. he watched someone in the stand drinking a beer.
It was pretty terrible. I mean, perhaps Man United are in terminal decline. All empires fall. Perhaps the Goths are about to sack Old Trafford. And by that, I don't mean Robert Smith and The Cure. Although if they turned up at West Ham singing Love Cats, that would be good, wouldn't it? One more thing. David De Gea gave an interview after the weekend when he said that he thinks someone must have put a curse on the team. Charlie, is it like Poirot, is it? He gets Ole, Mourinho, Van Gaal, Moyes and Wenger, and he sits them down and goes, one of you has made us only slightly above average.
Don't they complicate it, football teams? Just play, just run manager it. I reckon if Man United for the rest of the season played 4-4-2, stuck Ronaldo behind Rashford and just played 4-4-2, they'd be absolutely fine. They'd come fourth, be absolutely fine. Just let them play. Be easy. And with the curse, maybe they need to do the old Barry Fry thing of get someone to come in and wee in all four corners of the... Get Sir Alex to come in and wee in all four corners of the ground.
He's of an age. It'll only take about 20 minutes. That's
exactly.
All.
Exactly.
He'll do one and need to go again in 5 minutes.
Just wander him round.
I know this is strange, Sir Alex, but it's for the good of the club.
We need it.
That's
we
it.
We need it to happen.
That's it for part one. And by the way, this show, including some of the bits we didn't have time for on the telly, can also be listened to as a podcast. Download and subscribe to The Footballs On and On at all the usual podcast outlets. When we return, we're talking Arsenal's disciplinary issues and body cams for refs. Don't go changing. Part two of The Football's On. I'm Ian Stone here with Charlie Baker and Elliot Steele. So my team, Arsenal, had a pretty good weekend as most of their top four rivals dropped points. But there must be something in the water over at the Emirates to explain all those red cards. Four since January and 15 since Mikel Arteta took over just over 2 years ago. And before you ask, only four of them were Granit Xhaka. Elliot... Your team is managed by a man who set the gold standard for Arsenal for sendings off. Do you think Patrick Vieira will be secretly proud of how we've collectively tried to live up to his reputation?
Oh, he must love Granit Xhaka as a player. He must adore him.
In what sense?
Granit Xhaka is, I think, a good midfielder, but who?
He is.
But for 3 minutes of every game, forgets the rules of football. And then suddenly he's watched like WWE the night before and he's gone, oh, I saw this guy Randy Orton do this thing called an RKO. Why don't I try that out? And then he does it and goes, oh yeah, I'm not allowed to do that.
Yeah, he's sitting in the dressing room.
Oh, he's just, I love him. I absolutely adore. He would have been a fantastic footballer in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
He would have been a hero because that was back when you just got like a little talking to. For rugby tackling the player.
I mean, I don't know if anyone has seen this stat from Albino. Charlie, I don't know if you've seen this. Since January 2019, Burnley have made 1,145 fouls and have received 0 red cards. And over the same period, Arsenal have made 3 more fouls and received 15 red cards. I mean, I know all fouls are not the same, but something's going on, isn't it?
Do you not think with Granit Xhaka there's some nominative determinism going on? You know, if you call your child Granit, you know, he's just going to be hard, isn't it? It's like gladiators, isn't it? Granit! You know, it's who's in midfield today? that granite playing. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, of course, it is there. And also, Arteta, you've seen his hairline, Ian. Yeah. You've seen what's going on there. There's so much testosterone in the man. And that just seeps out by osmosis into the rest of the team. So they're running out. They're just running out there. He's got, you've just seen the man. You know, they're too tough, is what it is. And also, because they're Arsenal, you know, and they're not seen as tough, they're trying to prove themselves as well. So it's nominative determinism. I can't say it. Nominative determinism. I got it right first time. An overload of testosterone and also a bunch of show-off tryhards. So it's no good.
Yeah.
They'd be terrible in prison. Arsenal would be awful in prison. What's your name? Skull. Oh!
Yes.
What did you do? Just tax dodging.
That's come out.
Just tax dodging. Oh, well, you know, all right, Skull.
I mean, what about Elliot? What about Martinelli sending off at Wolves? He was sent off for two yellow card offences about 4 seconds apart. I mean, yeah. A bit Jobsworth from Michael Oliver, wasn't it?
No, it was two yellow card offences, and it seems that the first one he pushed someone over, and then on the second, it's like I was saying earlier, it's not like. You don't get a yellow card and then play goes on and then they're like, all right, but then you're allowed a free one because we're going to give you a yellow card from earlier. So you can do whatever you like up until you get that yellow card. Like, that's not how football works. He committed two yellow card offences. I thought it was good refereeing. And I also think mainly because it happened to Arsenal.
Yeah.
If that happened, no. Understand, Ian, if that happened to Crystal Palace, that is shocking and a disgrace and they should be investigated. But it happened to Arsenal, so it's just funny, because that's what
it is. I mean, it is the rules. You're right. It is the rules. But it's like one of those ones, you know, if someone does a foul in the first minute, it's normally a red card. It would normally be a yellow card.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those. It's like, well, yes, that is the rules. But do we want that to be the game? Do we want the game to be like that? Because it's like with, not to bring up VAR all the time, but it's like you break any free kick into the box down, someone's pulling someone and someone's elbowing someone in the head. Anything at all you can give a yellow card for. So if you're going to start pulling it back and giving yellow cards for absolutely everything in a move, in an attack, you'll be there all day.
Let me ask you this then. Charlie, I'll ask you, is there a plot against Arsenal? Is it a conspiracy? Was there a grassy knoll involved? And did Martinelli make the second foul from there?
Have you gone QAnon since we last met? Is this where we're actually filming this?
I've never seen anyone get booked for two yellow card offences like that. It had to be Arsenal, didn't it? So I'm starting to question.
Martinelli, I'd like to say he's not that kind of player. But
he's not.
He does seem that kind of player. Horrible little pulls and digs and little dives. And I mean, he's fantastic, isn't he? But also, I think his name, Martinelli, is like a girlfriend meeting a boyfriend's dad for the first time. Martin, Ellie.
I thought you were going to go down the nominative determinism route.
No, I didn't do that. I can't say it. I couldn't say it again. I mean, I've said it twice.
There is a bit, Elliot, you know, you were talking about Granit Xhaka, and we all have a thing at Arsenal. If Granit Xhaka did that, he'd be put on some penal colony like Papillon, you know. And I think there is a little bit of that. We get punished more than other teams. I think we should be given extra points at the start of the season as some sort of compensation.
Well, of course you think. Every Arsenal fan I know has started joining in with this, like, like there's some plot against them.
Yeah.
They can't accept the fact that this is that you've got when you win a game, it's like, oh, we've got this young team, it's amazing. And then when one of your players does something absolutely mental while they're on a yellow card, which they always do, and gets sent off, it's never brought up that it's a young team with a young manager and that the discipline isn't there. It's always like, oh, it's the refs. They're part of this betting syndicate where they want Gabriel and Xhaka and Martinelli to get sent off. It goes up to the government. And actually, if you look, it's to do with the Twin Tower. It's not. Your players are not disciplined.
It's an inside job. An inside job.
There's a lack of discipline from a manager who I think is probably not that good.
Well, that could be the other possibility. I'm not discounting
lack of
that.
Control.
One more thing. One more thing, Charlie, I'll ask you about this. According to Ruben Neves of Wolves, Arsenal celebrated the win too much. You can't be celebrating just when you win a trophy, can you? Otherwise, you guys would never have celebrated anything in football ever.
That was uncalled for.
Ian, we won the National League South, I'll have you know. It was the best moment of day of my life. I am completely against this, people saying you can't celebrate.
Yeah.
Of course, you should celebrate. Sport is meant to be about celebration. You know how much it takes to win a game, how much work they do on the training pitch. It happened in the Vanarama last week. Chesterfield got a 2-2 draw with Stockport, and they were celebrating like they'd won the league, and everyone's like, oh, celebrating like you've won the league. It's like, A, what people do is completely up to them, but that's the spirit in the group, isn't it? You want to see your players enjoying themselves, happy to be at the club, happy, you know, that was a good result for them, wasn't it?
It
was a really good result. So you have to go, okay, yeah, that is the sort of game that they'd normally have lost.
Yeah, yeah. And if Ruben Neves is watching this, I would suggest don't watch the victory parade in Senegal after they won the African Nations Cup. They were really celebrating. I guess that after years of never enjoying football, they need a bit of an outlet, really. As well as all the action from the Premier League on BT Sport, we also showed the top of the table clash between Porto and Sporting Lisbon in Portugal that ended in a 40-man brawl. If you look closely in amongst all of that, you can see the master of starting a fight, Pepe, who was one of the three players to receive a red card after the final whistle. Charlie, we're going to miss players like Pepe when they're gone. Not just him, Ramos, Costa, Suarez.
There'll be new people along, surely. You know those West Ham fans, you know, they sort of breed them. They're always the same. They've been the same since the 60s. They just sort of bring them on and on and on. And they teach them how to be like that, how to stand like that, how to talk like that, you know, and what clothes to wear and all those things. There'll be a new breed of players along soon, surely, like that.
Well, you'd hope so, but you just don't see it. Do you think Pepe would help Arsenal's disciplinary record, Elliot?
Oh, if I could bring anyone to Arsenal to sort out your disciplinary problem. I think you should bring Pepe in just to teach you how to do it properly.
Yeah.
Just to show you really how to get that. Like, oh, no. This is how you get sent off. No, none of this yellow card warning, then another yellow. This is straight red football in the 30th minute it hard for your team.
I mean, this is something we could take from American football, I think, from gridiron, is that, you know, you have specialist players, like they bring on a player to kick or whatever. Each team should be allowed just one designated hard man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and perhaps they're only ever players that are over 30, near to retirement. You know, so they've got a purpose in their old age, just to come on and cause trouble.
That's what Ronaldo could end up doing.
That could
be his place in United. They bring him on like a sort of goon in hockey.
Yeah, Cristiano.
Exactly, the goons. People, yeah, exactly.
Sorry. I mean, even the ball boys were involved. I don't think I've ever seen ball boys involved before. Elliot, that is an impressive level of togetherness in that club, don't you think?
Yeah, that's good. That's good team management. Everyone knew what they were meant to be doing. They were all straight in there. You can't teach that. That's instinct. That's pure football heart, that is.
Well, yes. I mean, like I said, it's 5 minutes of that video and it's well worth a watch. When you see what happened at Porto, you have to feel just a little bit sorry for referees, those suckers of all joy from our beautiful game. As happens every week, there were some contentious refereeing decisions last weekend. Martinelli getting sent off against Wolves, contentious in my opinion. Wilf Zaha being denied a penalty against Brentford, Elliot. We know it's not easy, but are they getting worse, Charlie?
It's a really awful job. I don't know if you've ever done it.
Yes.
I don't know why anybody does it. There's a few things I will just say that need to change with refereeing and especially refereeing at kids' football, is that more mums need to get involved. More women need to get involved in refereeing.
Yes.
Because men, for one reason or another, do listen to women. Mm. And it's very male-based at the moment. Training as a referee needs to be free. At the moment, it's about 150, 200 quid. So it does put a lot of people off doing it. So it needs to be free at point of training, I think. It's a horrible job. I think we will more and more move towards eventually it being automated. I genuinely think in the top leagues, I genuinely think eventually we won't have any human on the pitch involvement at all, because you don't actually need it. You don't. If you've got people watching the game, you and I can watch it. You know, I know you need stuff close up, but I think eventually it will not. You might have the person there to run around with a camera on, but I don't think you will eventually have any human involvement in the actual decisions.
Right. But then if we want to sing, you don't know what you're doing to some, you know, computer. That's a bit unfortunate.
To Alexa.
Exactly, you know. Exactly. Why don't more players get into it? I know that's always the discussion. I've no idea why ex-players don't get into reffing. So it gives them a whole level more of abuse to give the refs.
They don't need to. I think, Elliot, I think Charlie has a point about women refs. I mean, we know from
that's
comedy
a very
clubs,
good point.
Women security seem to calm things down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you think they should have to explain
mums,
their
decisions? Mums, we need mums. We need mums and nanas. And dinner ladies to turn up and be the ref.
Something like, where's the free kick being taken from? And they go, well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you.
Exactly. I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. Yellow card.
Elliot, do you think refs should have to explain their decisions, though?
Yeah, it's insanity that they don't. I don't understand, and I know I'm going to be biased because I'm a Palace fan, and I actually sent it, the video of it into a football group. I mean, going like, what is your lot's opinions on this, on Zaha's denial for that penalty? And everyone was like, it's a penalty. And then you look at something like VAR and you go, I don't understand, you need to come out afterwards and go, here's why I haven't given that as a penalty. And then the people in VAR need to go, here's why we haven't looked at it. Because you know the rules inside out. Yeah. You need to then explain to the fans, I don't really know the rules. I just kind of pick up and choose the rules as I go along as a football fan. That's what being a football fan is. If something happens to your team, then it's the rules suit it that way. And if it happens to another team, then the rules suit it a different way. But they should have to come out and go, here's why we haven't given that. And they might actually make sense. And then as a football fan, you're just left with like your passion being what's driven you. That's the emotion, the wanting a goal. But they don't. They just sort of go, it's weird. They're like the CIA. They just go like, we don't have to explain anything. We don't have to disclose that. It's mental. I think the reffing in the Prem is shocking. Like,
well, this is what I want to ask. I like the idea of that offside decision being redacted. Charlie.
Yes.
You have to put up with, you know, stuff in the National League. What's the refereeing like there? Do the parents run the line?
Don't get me started. Well, I will say in the National League South, because you don't have a fourth official in the National League South, we did once have a guy come out of the crowd who'd done his exams to run the line in a professional football
Amazing.
Match at Playmore. The Stan Whedon was his name. It was a great quiz question. It's shocking. It's really awful.
Yeah.
It's a really bad level. And don't get me started on it because, I mean, you could play... Now, the Vanarama is, of course, on BT Sport and they do a brilliant job of the coverage. I've only ever once wanted VAR and that was in the playoff final last season at Ashton Gate when it was us versus Hartlepool, where we had two perfectly good goals disallowed. And we, of course, lost the game. And I'm sure Hartlepool fans will still enjoy me saying that. But we had two, and that was, and I shall never forget Simon Mather's name as long as I live, Simon Mather. And Simon Mather, I really hope you're enjoying refereeing in the Football League now, unlike Torquay, who of course aren't in the Football League anymore. Not that I'm bitter, of course, Simon Mather, Ian, I'm not bitter at all. But the stand is such a hard job, and it's too many men involved, and you either let people be fallible, which is what people are. And this is why I don't think we should have VAR, because people are fallible. And you either let that happen and we all accept that the ref will get it wrong and they are human, or you completely digitise and VAR and AI the whole thing, which I think, unfortunately, because there'll be more money involved, it will go that way.
And if you want someone who's infallible, you have to get the Pope to ref. I mean, that's the only way to go.
I think that's fair.
But not the under 12s.
That's not going in.
Oh, well.
Funny though it is. Okay, now it's time for Who Am I? You know the drill. I give out the clues and the panellists, and you at home have to guess who I'm talking about.
Lovely.
I think you might both get this week's. I was born in 1976. I played for 7 clubs in the Netherlands, in Italy, where I played for both Milans, in Spain, for both El Clasico sides, and my home country. I won a lot of cups, but only one league title. However, I won the World Cup twice and finished as a runner-up once, finishing top scorer at one of those tournaments. And I won the Ballon d'Or in 1997 and 2002. Oh. Who am I? We will tell you after the break. Part 3 of The Football's On with Elliot Steele, Charlie Baker and me, Ian Stone. So who am I? Here are the clues again. Born in 1976, I played for 7 clubs in the Netherlands, in Italy, where I played for both Milans, in Spain, where I played for Real Madrid and Barcelona and my home country. I won a lot of cups, but only one league title. However, I won the World Cup twice and finished as a runner-up once, finishing top scorer at one of those tournaments. And I also won the Ballon d'Or in 1997 and 2002. Who am I? Charlie, ooh, I'll come to you first.
Keep a straight face.
I don't know any footballers is the problem. Is it Rodney Jack?
Sorry, Charlie, no, say that again.
Is it Rodney Jack, Talking United's not... greatest ever player?
It's not Rodney Jack.
Okay.
No. Do you know what? They're having a go at me here because I actually sent them the answer in the email. Elliot.
Is it not Sean Derry?
Who? No, it's not Sean Derry either.
It sounds like Sean Derry.
Do you know who it is? Of course you know who it is. I told you who it was. It is Ronaldo. Ronaldo Nazario. His only league title was with Real Madrid in 2002-2003. I used to refer to him as Fat Ronaldo, and then Julian Lescott told me off for doing that. So I shan't be doing that again. But he's definitely got a bit of timber now. But what a player. What a player.
What do you call him now? Fat Ron?
Address him by his second name. You're not his mate.
Fat Nazario.
No, I can't. Fat Ron would have been okay. Now, our regular feature where we talk to BT Sport pundits about their favourite game. And I'm not talking Scrabble. No, it's the favourite game they played in. Last week, Glenn Hoddle waxed lyrical about his England debut. This week, it's the turn of Chris Sutton to get equally misty-eyed. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Like everyone, you're struggling to pick one, aren't you? Favourite game. But have you got one?
Well, there were so many. I mean, I could choose multiple games because I was such a great player.
You had so much joy in the game. Yeah. I see that.
Against the Arsenal, against your team, many, many favourite games.
You can choose that if you want.
But I'm not going to go down that route. Okay. I mean, I could have chosen Norwich City when we beat Bayern Munich, the famous game in the Olympic Stadium. Can you remember that?
I do remember that. 1-0, wasn't it?
No, 2-1. You obviously only watched the first 20 minutes when Jeremy Goss volleyed that one in. But I'm not going to choose that.
OK, what are you going to choose?
I'm going to choose my Glasgow derby debut for Celtic against Rangers. 6-2, the demolition derby, it was called. As my first season up at Celtic, I had a nightmare at Chelsea. Before you say that, I'll say it myself. And then I moved up north of the border, moved to Celtic under Martin O'Neill. We started the season well. Rangers started the season very well. And going into the game,
At Celtic Park?
So at Celtic Park.
Did you know what was coming? Had you been to an Old Firm derby before? Had you seen the craziness of it?
I'd been up to watch a Celtic game in an area of Glasgow, which was a Celtic pub when I was at Blackburn Rovers, and went up with a few Blackburn players. Chris Coleman was one of the Blackburn players, and a Celtic fan asked Chris Coleman for his autograph, and then another fan told him to leave Chris Coleman alone, and they ended up brawling, and the next thing, the whole bar's brawling with each other.
And so, you there thinking, I must come here and play football.
I liked the feeling. Nice, friendly lot. So,
you walk out at Celtic Rangers at Celtic Park, and the noise is unlike anything you've ever experienced?
incredible. I mean, the rivalry is so, so intense. And, you know, it really hit me. And thinking about it now, I mean, it does it. I've got a considerably hairy neck. It makes the hairs stand up on end. I mean, it does because there's, you know, I mean, I played in the Norwich Ipswich Derby, the old farm derby. This was the old firm, of course. And but it was so intense and the pressure was on. Because Rangers had demolished Celtic the previous season in the league, beaten Celtic by something, 21 points, something like that. Yeah. Martin and Neil had gone up. There was a lot of optimism, but, you know, this is the acid test, and we pumped them.
You certainly did. And did you play well, by the way?
Well, I don't like to talk about myself, but I scored after 52 seconds.
that would have relaxed you, wouldn't
it? It didn't relax me too much. As a tap-in, you could have scored that. Well, maybe you couldn't.
You haven't seen me play.
No, that's why I changed my mind halfway through the answer. And then we went on Henrik Larsson, who was, the king. He was a god up at Celtic. Scored a brilliant goal, the best goal I've ever seen at Celtic Park in the second half. I don't get a lot of credit for that goal, though, because had the ball not hit me in the belly on the halfway line and bounced back to Henry, he never would have scored that. But that was an incredible goal.
That's an assist, isn't it?
They all count, don't they? And then I scored in the 92nd minute from a yard and a half. So my two goals were, I think, combined from 2.5 yards. Two goals, 2.5 yards. 6-2. Incredible game. And, you know, that whole era and the Martin O'Neill era, I think, in terms of galvanising a football club, giving the fans real belief and optimism and taking it in or uniting a football team, I should say, and I think that was what Martin was absolutely brilliant at. And, you know, people look at that particular period in the team which Martin built there. Brilliant era, but that game was special.
I want to watch the highlights now.
Yeah, you should do, yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that was Chris Sutton there talking about Celtic 6, Rangers 2 in, I think it was 1998. He's a good man, Chris. You said, Charlie, you've seen his brother play.
His brother played in Scotland for a long time, and I saw him play for St Mirren, and I thought it was Chris Sutton. And he's, playing for St Mirren and looking like a bit like Chris Sutton. He's sort of like a stars in their eyes Chris Sutton.
Today, it's Matthew, sort of the career, Chris Sutton.
The career's sort of nearly there. It's like a Chris Sutton tribute act.
I imagine him coming out the dressing room in all the puff of smoke.
Yeah, I mean, he was good. I think he had a long football career in Scotland, so no disrespect at all.
No. Now, we've talked quite a lot about Celtic Rangers on the show, and it is probably one of the noisiest derbies in the world. But we've all got derby games that stir the passions. Elliot, I'll start with you. I mean, it is Brighton, even though you've only got 11 London clubs to choose from. I don't understand the M23 derby. Can you explain briefly?
Okay, it's not a derby. It's a rivalry.
Oh, it's not?
It's a rivalry. And it's not... The M23 doesn't go past either stadium. Sky just called it that. And then everyone goes, that's really stupid. And we go, we know, we didn't call it that. And everyone's like, no, that's... And we were like, nobody from either club ever called it that. So it's actually kind of united both sides in going like, it's now us and Brighton v everyone else as we have to explain our rivalry. I don't know why it's a rivalry, but it is.
It is.
Do you know what I mean? It just, some things just are with football.
It's Terry Venables, isn't it? It's a Terry Venables thing, isn't it? That's what it was from.
Something to do with that, yeah. I don't really know, but you know what it's like with football. Someone just goes, you hate them. Why? I don't know, we do. And that's that. which is basically which is everything that's wrong with the world at the moment and why we're in the state we're in, but just on a sort of Premier League club level.
Yeah. Charlie, it's slightly different for Torquay. I mean, you've got Exeter or Plymouth. Do either of them care as much as you?
We haven't at the moment.
Does the Devon Derby have a name? Is it the Jam on Cream Derby, like it should be called?
We used to have brilliant derbies. Exeter and Plymouth used to be fantastic derbies. Always Boxing Day, because then you'd have to travel anywhere. But we haven't been in the same division as them for a long, long time. And so our derbies now are Yeovil. Well, it was Forest Green Rovers, but it, at the moment it's Yeovil. But Yeovil is about as close to Torquay. It's like Arsenal's derby being Aston Villa. You know, it takes about as long to get there. It takes so long to get there. But it's just basically, well, you lot are all down there, aren't you? You all speak like that. So that's the derby, you know. But we beat them twice over Christmas. It was still over Christmas. And we took 6 points off them over Christmas. So it's still pretty sweet. But I do miss going. Exeter City was always our main derby. Plymouth, they just always used to sing, laugh at the Torquay. We only laugh at the Torquay. Like complete indifference to us, Plymouth, Argyle. But Torquay, Exeter. And also, there's a brilliant Torquay United Exeter clip. If you find the Twitter feed that is, I can't say the word, S word, 90s football, then their main clip is of Aidan Newhouse missing from 1 yard, putting it over the bar. And that is a Boxing Day Torquay Exeter derby. And I am just behind the goal in that clip. But yeah, I do miss going up to Sid James Park and playing them very much.
Yeah, no, we do love a derby. So, the world came to a standstill last weekend. In years to come, people will say they'll remember exactly where they were when Chelsea won the Club World Championship and finally finished football by winning everything there is to win. Almost all, incidentally, since Roman Abramovich turned up. I wonder what could have made the difference in that time. Charlie, I know you took a trip to Dover on Saturday to watch Torquay in the National League. How much were you all wishing that you were in Abu Dhabi watching your team win the World Club Championship?
I would have loved it if Roman Abramovich, because he's won everything now, hasn't he? He's won the Champions League, won the league, club tour, won the lot. I'd have loved it if they lifted the trophy and then he'd just released, you know, come on the pitch. You never see him, do you, say anything. If he'd come on the pitch and gone, that's your lot, thanks very much. My name's Roman Abramovich. I've won everything, that's it, I don't need to. And that was his end of his involvement. Here's the keys to the hotel. There you go, you know.
He just disappears into like a fine mist.
That was it, never saw him ever again.
Wow. Just where did Roman?
You know, that would have been beautiful, wouldn't it? Look, every trophy's great if you win it, isn't it? Torquay were in the final of the FA Trophy once versus Ebbsfleet. We all travelled up expecting to beat the train station at Wembley. We lost 1-0. It was utterly horrific. We've never spoken of it ever again. If we'd won that, we'd have had a you know, open top bus around, you know, half of the southwest. But yeah, it's great if you win it, isn't it?
Well,
you know, if you don't win it, then who cares?
I mean, that's the point. It seems like one of those things, Elliot. Chelsea have now won every competition. But no one outside of Stamford Bridge gives a monkeys about it.
I didn't know it was going on until they won it. I saw them lifting a trophy and I thought, what's that? And then I went, I had to actually look, the Club World Cup's on. And you just go, oh, okay. It's one above the Community Shield.
Yes,
but like slightly, like that's not that. Like I hate
it's
that.
Got it's got the whiff of pre-season about it, isn't it?
Yeah, I hate it when people count
the Audi Cup. It's got the whiff of the Audi Cup about it.
Well, can I just say, although pretty much no one in this country cares less about the Club World Championship, 15,000 Brazilians made the 7,000-mile journey. It seems a much more prestigious thing in South America. Charlie, is it? Why is that? Is it because they're prone to rampant inflation and the ever-present threat of a military coup? Do you think that's what's going on?
It's that, Ian. but also, they are amazing. And all their I think all their players get exported. All their best players in Brazil get exported, don't they? They're basically just like Brazilian beef, you know, like off we go around the world. And I expect if you support a team that's doing well, you want to think, well, we're amazing. We beat everybody. Surely we'll beat the people we export everything to as well. And as we've discovered, if you stop, I can't do a Brexit analogy there. I was going to, but I can't think of what it is. I'll leave that sort of thing to you, Ian.
Thank you, Charlie. We'll add it in the edit.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, it's time for Call Yourself a Fan. First up is Charlie Baker with three questions on Torquay United and a couple of general knowledge. Here we go, Charlie. Torquay United were founded in 1899, but when were they first admitted into the Football League?
Oof, 1821.
What, before they were founded?
Yeah, oh, sorry. Sorry, 1921.
No, that's close, but it was 1927. Unlucky.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's 70 years before we were actually allowed in the league, but we only got it together 70 years later to actually bother making a team.
Very talky situation.
We kept coming bottom. we were like, oh, did that? Oh, wait, that actually happened. It's been 70 years. We've just been going to the pub.
Okay, question two. Who is Torquay's record goal scorer?
It's Robin Stubbs or Sammy Collins.
You can't have two answers.
It's Robin Stubbs.
It's not. It's Sammy Collins.
Oh, no.
Goals. How can you not know your record goal scorer? All right,
I said his name. I said his name.
Yes. All right, what's the next one? What is the highest division in the football pyramid that Torquay have won? You said it earlier.
Have won?
Yes.
The National League South.
Indeed. We never won. 2018, 2019. Yeah. All right, couple of general knowledge.
Beautiful day.
Couple of general knowledge questions for you, Charlie. Which was the first World Cup finals to feature substitutes?
Oh. I don't know anything about football. 1978.
Unlucky, 1970. It was Anatoly Puzac of the USSR was the first to be substituted. And number five, during the Premier League era, four managers have managed both Spurs and Chelsea. Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho, Glenn Hoddle, and one other. Who is the fourth?
Spurs and Chelsea.
Yes.
It's Harry Redknapp.
It's a difficult question that. You'll know it when I say it. It's André Villas-Boas.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I mean.
And Charlie.
I didn't know the name of Torquay's leading scorer of all time. Yeah. So I'm not going to know André Villas-Boas.
No, that is true. Charlie, though, scored 1 point in part four.
Get in
part four. Elliot will be the one in the spotlight. See you in a short while. Welcome back to the final part of the show. Call Yourself a Fan part two. Elliot Steele is up trying to chase down Charlie's one. Same format. Three on his
tough,
team.
Tough lead.
And two general knowledge. Here we go, Elliot. Jim Cannon holds the record for appearances with 663 first-team games, making his debut when he was 19. How many years were there between his first and last appearance?
And he played how many games, sorry?
He played 663 games, but how many years between his first and last appearance?
I'm going to go 13.
Difficult one. That's 15. He made his debut in 1973, scored against Chelsea, last game in 1988 as they beat Manchester City. Do you remember the days when we used to beat Manchester City, Elliot? Do you remember that?
We beat them.
Anyone used to beat Manchester City.
We beat them earlier in the season.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, okay, well done.
Yeah, unlike Arsenal, who had that, who still talk about the "we played well against City" game.
We did play well then.
We played well against City, and one of our players got sent off because there's an agenda against us and they couldn't have us beat City. That is, and you all still talk about it.
Yes. Anyway, number two. The Eagles hold the record for most playoff final wins. How many have they had? Oh.
I'm going to go five.
Four. 1989. Ooh. 1997, 2004 and 2013. All four wins, incidentally, happened at different stadiums. If you can name them, well done. I can't. I don't have a clue.
Wembley, Millennium, Millennium
Wembley,
Stadium.
Wembley, Cardiff and a couple of others, perhaps. Number three. Since Palace introduced the Player of the Year award in 1972, who has won it the most times?
It's not who it should be. I know that. I'm going to go Andy Johnson.
You know what? It was a decent guess, but it's Julian Speroni.
Oh, of course, of course.
Because he's the goalkeeper.
Of course.
And he works pretty hard for Crystal Palace.
It is, because every year, we have this thing at Palace where it should be Wolf Zaha every year, but people, for some reason, don't quite like Zaha for some reason. Which is silly. Because there's years where Speroni's won it, and it's like, I'm pretty sure it was Zaha who's kept us up.
Well, he's won it 3 years in a row, 8, 9 and 10, and again in 2014. Let's have a go at your general knowledge, Elliot. Which is the only country to win a Euros with a manager that didn't come from that country?
Oh.
One of the dullest teams I've ever watched play football.
Oh, that's giving it away.
Is it?
No, it isn't.
Is it going to be that... is it the Denmark side that won it?
No, it's Greece. Oh. Otto Rehhagel.
Oh, they were worse.
They were worse.
They were worse than Denmark.
2004. He's got zero at the moment, Elliot. He's going into his final question. There have been two Spanish managers to win the League Cup. Pep Guardiola is one. Who is the other one? It's a tough question.
How have I not got one? How have I managed this? I was so nervous coming into this because I thought, because you want to get the ones for your club, but then,
you're not getting this, are you, Elliot?
I'm just going to go because he said him earlier, Villa-Boas, but I don't, he's Spanish, isn't he?
Are you just saying a name that you heard recently?
Well, let me change that, because they're not going to have him as the answer for two questions, are they? They're not just going to... They've not just looked up on it. The producer hasn't looked on a fact sheet and gone, yeah, and there's another fact about him we could throw into that question. The League Cup, I don't know.
You have no idea. It's Juan de Ramos. For Tottenham, 2008, last time they won a trophy, I believe. Elliot scored zero. And Charlie
Wins
1-0.
I feel like Arsenal, I've defended a 1-0 lead.
I am George Graham. Got one early and then back to the
wall. This is the worst day
well
of
done.
My life.
Now,
because I'm going to get Palace fans now tweeting me. Oh.
Try and let it go, Elliot. Try and let it go. On last week's show, we managed to grab a few moments with Liza Minnelli to talk about her enduring love for Roy Hodgson. But as a lifelong Swindon Town fan, she's also got opinions about all aspects of football. Here she is on the history of the price of footballers.
Much? That's just me asking how much something is in a British accent. Footballers these days, they cost as much as racehorses. We know this. But where did all that start? In 1904, Alf Common joined Middlesbrough for a four-figure sum, which was a national scandal at the time, but a precedent had been set. Betcha. A cut to 75 years later, in 1979, Trevor Francis became the first million-pound transfer when he was sold to Nottingham Forest. I hope he was worth it, boys. Of course, in the early 90s, the Premier League was formed, and that's when prices went crazy. Yes. In 1995, Man U paid £7 million for Andy Cole. Just a year later, Newcastle paid £15 million for Alan Shearer. How much did Cristiano Ronaldo fetch when he was sold in 2009? £80 million. Wah! Outside England, I don't even want to think about how much Mbappe and Messi fetched recently. It was close to 200 million euros. Oh, I haven't seen that much money since my third divorce.
Yes, thank you to Liza Minnelli, or Suze Kempner, as she's more commonly known. Elliot, the transfer fees... they've always been a point of contention. Do you think when Alf Common signed for Middlesbrough for £1,000 in 1904, he felt the pressure? Do you think when he had a bad game, Pete would moan, how can he be so rubbish? He's on 2 shillings and 6 pence a week.
People going, oh, Middlesbrough, what they haven't seen is they've just inflated the transfer market. They've just ruined it. Things are going to go mental from now on. Well, that's the thing now. If he's going for £1,000, no wonder you're getting, you know, the Harry Maguire of that day for £800. This is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, the record signings. Who's the record signing at Torquay, Charlie?
Record signing at Torquay. Well, we rarely buy anyone. I will say that. I think it's probably Leon Constantine about 15 to 20 years ago. Because we don't buy anybody anymore. You see,
right?
It's all free transfers. It's all players at the end of their contract. So but look, if a picture of an ape is going to be worth millions of pounds and a Bitcoin is, which I don't understand any of this, is £45,000 for one, then a footballer is going to be worth 120 million quid, isn't it? Because that's an actual person, an actual thing you can touch. If, you know, don't get too close. But it's an actual thing. They actually do something. So I don't understand how money works anymore anyway.
Okay, fair enough. Succinct and to the point, Charlie. And what about you, Elliot? Who's Palace's record signing?
Benteke, 30 million.
Yeah.
I know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Hey, we signed Pepe for 72 million quid. I mean, we've had some good value for money signings. You know, Vieira was 4 million quid. Henri was 10. Wow. But, you know, Pepe perhaps not.
Ian, sorry, on Pepe, is Pepe the most Spurs player ever to play for Arsenal?
In the sense that...
That he's no final ball.
Well, if that is what the Spurs... If that is what we're saying, then he is certainly up there. There's no doubt about that. He does... He's a sort of... who was that winger who used to play for Tottenham? Mark Falco, wasn't he? Falco. Yeah. He'd run up and down the wing... And there wouldn't be much end product. Rule Fox, one of those. He's got a bit of that.
No end product.
Yeah. He's got a bit of that about him. And for 72 million quid, I'm glad to have contributed with my season ticket money. let's do a bit of this week in history before we go. 15th of February 2003, Arsenal beat Man United at Old Trafford in the cup. And Fergie booted a boot across the dressing room.
And it hit
David Beckham just above the eye. Charlie, you can't do that anymore, can you? Across the dressing rooms. Health and safety gone mad, isn't it?
They all clean up their dressing rooms now as well, don't they? So it wouldn't have been there. You've seen that? They make a big thing of it, don't they? When they leave, look how immaculately they all do it, you know. Look how immaculately we've left the dressing room. Yeah, of course you absolutely flipping should. Why are you leaving it in a tip anyway? Although I do like the smell of a dressing room and a bit of old tape hanging around. You know, that is sort of the way you want it to be, but... You can't kick a boot across I mean, these days, well, the boots are so light, is the thing. It's not like you're kicking an old Kaiser 5 across or a World Cup, bit of old kangaroo leather, is it? You're kicking a bit of plastic across there now.
They actually float now, the boots.
They do.
If you kick them, they get stuck on the ceiling. You have to get someone with a broom handle to get them down.
It's easier to curl them as well for finesse.
Yeah, they do. They're lighter every World Cup.
They are, yeah. Well, at West End, they practice on cats, don't they?
You did one.
All right, 12th of February, 1955. Duncan Edwards played in a Manchester derby. They lost 5-0 to City. And he got nabbed by police for riding home on his bike without any lights. He got fined five bob, which is 25p in our money. Elliot, that is a long way from getting done for speeding in your Bugatti Veyron, isn't it?
Yeah, it really shows how far football has come, isn't it? Also, what I was most amazed by that is that in the 1950s, they had lights on the bike.
Yeah.
I did not think they would have had that.
It was to see through the fog. Ask your dad.
That was the influence of Alf Common. Big spending bastard.
That's it. That's how we should end the show. That's a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Charlie Baker, Elliot Steele, and Suze Kempner. We will see you next week.